Everything is damp and brown. The sea rushes and thumps at the bottom of the cliff. The misty drizzle hangs heavy in the cold air. Walkers hurry by with the hoods up. The late afternoon shadows are deep and mysterious. That shiver is not only because of the cold. It's not the day for standing about. Let's get inside and put the kettle on.
Hello, my name is Peter John Cooper. The long, damp autumn evenings are the times for storytelling. What's more, it's Halloween, time to remember some of the more chill-inducing tales. If you feel up to it, I'll tell you a tale which I'm calling simply Halloween Horror. You probably remember the case of the three Dobson children. It's one of those awkward, unsolved mysteries that crop up on those cold case programmes from time to time. Well, the case file still remains open. It's fat with the thousands of statements that were taken at the time. But these have never produced any firm leads, still less suspects. Although the parents were interviewed a number of times, but only, as the police put it, as material witnesses. However, the gossip on social media made their lives so intolerable it led to divorce and, it is supposed, the eventual suicide of the mother and the complete disappearance of the father, who changed his identity and emigrated to South America, or Australia, or South Africa. Just let the words of one of the officers investigating serve to sum it up. It was, he said, the most gruesome, despicable, inexplicable, cold-blooded crime ever to confront any police officer in the course of their duties. And the fact that it happened in sleepy, supposedly family-friendly Bournemouth only serves to underline the grimness of the case with blood. The known facts are these, and to make it as palatable as I can, I will leave the press hype to one side and try to use words that are as dry and as matter-of-fact as I'm able. But however I put them, the facts are terrible, and grown men were physically sick at the initial recounting of them. Perhaps, if you are of a sensitive disposition, it would be as well for you to skip the next few minutes altogether. The headlines were of three small girls who were discovered standing hand in hand, quite still, in the midst of a torrential downpour of rain, in the middle of the Westcliff Green, in a condition that caused hardened police officers to weep. First, A little background. That is simple enough and could be the story of any one of thousands of families that descend on Bournemouth for half term. The Dobsons were apparently an ordinary enough family from South London. They had booked an Airbnb near the Westcliff because, they claimed, it was cheaper than an hotel. Mum and Dad and the three girls. Bournemouth is not really the place for kids in the winter. If the weather is bad and you can't play on the beach, there's nothing left but to watch the latest Disney release at the Odeon. And then what? Well, if you're not old enough to get drunk in the myriad of bars that line every street, there's nothing for you. And as they weren't by any means a wealthy family, they couldn't keep eating pizzas out. So by the Wednesday of a particularly wet and stormy half-term week, the kids were crawling up the walls. The only books on the bookshelves were a musty copies of some Greek plays and a bound set of Shakespeare. As nobody was up for reading Oedipus Rex or King Lear, they were but briefly taken down and only glanced at. And the parents were, as always, on the point of rowing. It was money, always money. Something had to be done, the mother is reported to have said. Anything. The older girl had become sullen and brooding because of the bickering, and at one point had said that she wished they never had to see each other again. It was by chance that as they walked by the little corner shop near where they were staying, the father drew their attention to a tattered and rain-soaked handwritten poster taped to a lamppost. A pumpkin carving competition was to be held at a local hotel. Well, no way, said Mum. No way we can afford pumpkins for you lot. We don't have to. Look, said Dad. The notice informed them they could collect a pumpkin each for free from the shop and present it partly carved at a certain hotel on Friday, where the finishing details, principally the facial features, would be cut out in the presence of the judge and prizes awarded. Well, that's a bit weird, said Mum. Carving the face last? No, not at all, said Dad. It's an obvious way to stop cheating. You do the eyes and so on in full view of the judges to prove it's all your own work. I still think it's a bit rummy, said Mum. The police officer, who was the first to visit the parents after the children had been discovered, was able to confirm that she had seen quite a lot of debris that indicated there had been significant pumpkin activity at the flat. Although at the time she was acting in the role of a liaison officer and consoling an apparently horrified set of parents, so her primary function was not looking for additional clues. She had conducted them by car with blue lights and sirens directly to the Royal Bournemouth Hospital, where the children had already been taken, and she was not able to furnish any further details on Mr. and Mrs. Dobson's state of minds, apart from the fact that they were apparently totally shocked and benumbed by what had happened, and blamed each other on the way. It may or may not be significant that no sign of the poster was ever discovered, and the shopkeeper merely shrugged and said someone had come in and paid for three pumpkins and asked for them to be kept until collected. The staff couldn't agree on any sort of description, apart from the fact that it was a man, or possibly a woman, or a tall child come to that. Difficult to tell under a hoodie on a very wet day and in a crowded shop. And to compound the police's frustration, the memory chip for the shop's CCTV had been removed and was actually in the custody of the police as evidence in a shoplifting case from the day before. So there was no visual evidence of the pumpkin buyer. The first indication of the horror occurred not more than an hour after the parents had walked with the children and their pumpkins and had left them at the end of the street where the hotel and the competition was meant to be. The children had each been equipped with a sharp knife from the kitchen drawer. The mother and father's accounts differ somewhat at this point, but the fact seemed to be that the row between the parents had continued as they walked, with the mother distraught that she might have said something to the effect that she wished they'd never had children in the first place. One of the children may have said she wished they'd never see their parents again, and the father said that they walked in stony silence, and he warned them to be careful with the knives because they'd be charged for them if not in the cutlery drawer when they left. The result, however, was the same. They were all so engrossed in their own emotions that they took little notice of where exactly they had taken the children in the unfamiliar back streets lined with identical little hotels and guest houses. More important, neither of the parents in their later state of shock could remember the name of the hotel nor the name of the street it was situated in. They gave instructions to the older child to look after her sisters and pointed to a bar nearby where they would be waiting, and to be especially careful when crossing the main road. Anyway, as we all know, the next sight of the children was of them standing hand in hand, motionless, in the middle of the Westcliff Green, rainwater pouring off them like tears. There was absolutely no indication of how they had got there, and no driver could be traced who may have spotted them crossing the usually busy road. Here, I must emphasise that the following is not for the faint-hearted. Please skip on a few minutes if you feel you ought. Because of the rain, there were few walkers at that time of the day. The jogger who was doing circuits of the clifftop path took no notice at first, but registered there was something odd about three children standing hand in hand in the deluge and not seeming to take shelter. So when she passed on a second lap, she decided to break off and see what was keeping them there. As she approached and called out, she became more and more concerned, and when she reached the children, realised the full horror of the situation, she vomited and collapsed to the ground. It was her collapse that caught the eye of a dog walker passing by, who was already ringing for an ambulance when she reached the wretched group and realised the terrible nature of what she was seeing, and immediately asked for police to attend as well. The children themselves were clearly so deeply traumatised by what had happened that finding out exactly who they were and where they came from proved to be a real puzzle. Oddly enough, it was the youngest child who was able to speak first, probably because in her innocence she hadn't gathered the full horror of what had happened to her and her sisters. This led to the first delay in contacting the parents because, of course, the only information she could give was of her address in London. And when the local police attended there, they could only discover from a neighbour that the family were away on holiday in Brighton or Bognor or somewhere. So during all this time, any forensic evidence there may have been was being washed away by the steady downpour. Eventually, it was the parents themselves who contacted the police, and given the state of the children and the fact that they had stayed overlong in the bar while waiting for them to return, it was going to be a couple of days before any sort of serious questions could be asked and the investigation could begin in earnest. Right from the beginning, rightly or wrongly, the police took an antagonistic approach to the parents, if only for the fact that they had left their children and their partially completed pumpkins at an hotel in a street whose name neither of them could now remember, and furthermore had not in any way seen fit to question the bona fides of the organisation running the pumpkin competition at the time. The parents considered they had acted entirely properly, given the hype that Bournemouth was a family-friendly destination. But then they had come from London. And despite weeks of door-to-door investigation, the police could find no hotel that had organised such an event. At the hospital, the children were kept in a secure, locked, private ward, with access only allowed to staff specially vetted for their psychological stability, and then only in pairs, until such time that it was deemed fit for the children to be returned to the parents, which was done under cover of darkness one night some weeks later. And so time passed, and as the days grew into weeks, and the weeks into months, and because the police met such a brick wall, it was inevitable that the social media whispering and rumour-mongering began and quickly grew, all of it pointing fingers of suspicion at the parents, at least for their dereliction of parental duties, if nothing more sinister. And because of this swilling cauldron of hate and misinformation that grew up, the children were taken into care and given new identities, although, sadly, they will never be able to hide completely because of the results of the horror that overtook them. More lately, the questions have become less those of who and where, and the speculation has been of why. Why was such a gruesome crime perpetrated on three innocent sisters? There was never any suggestion that the girls had been interfered with sexually in any way, so the only rationale was that somehow money was a motive. But no one could see what that could be. How could the parents or anyone have sought to profit from such a terrible deed? The only other explanation, implausible as it seems, was that there must be a complete madman at loose in Bournemouth. Oh yes, the one piece of information that was gained from the girls was that it was a man. Somebody in a grey suit was the last thing any of them saw, but the madman theory also met a brick wall. There was never any other horror like this in Bournemouth, although as social media delights in pointing out, there have been similar crimes in other poorer parts of the world, but despite everyone's best efforts, no connection could ever be made. Again, a small but perhaps crucial detail came to light when a doctor examined the victims and came to the conclusion that what had happened could only have been caused by somebody with medical knowledge and expertise. And again, putting aside the lurid, grotesque words of the tabloids, we can only say merely that what must have happened must have been swift and surgical. Apart from the large Royal Bournemouth Hospital, the town has always been known for its myriad of small private clinics and rehabilitation centres, many of them offering odd therapies and employing all sorts of medical practitioners with varying qualifications from all parts of the globe. So it seemed logical that the perpetrator could be found here. But again, despite weeks of footwork, nobody came forward with any information that could be of any help. So there it rests. A case file fat with statements, but no real facts. The children themselves, now living under changed identities, but still suffering the appalling results of what befell them, and thus under public scrutiny wherever they go. The parents no longer available for any further questions to be asked. Wild theories abound on social media, and videos are made containing lurid and graphic representation of the crime. I will not add to the wild speculation, but one is forced to ask, is there still today some scalpel-wielding psychopathic surgeon who gains some weird satisfaction from a very particular and horrible visitation? Is there some weird religious cult centred on Bournemouth with particularly gruesome and bloody rituals? Did the parents hope to gain some pecuniary advantage by perhaps selling their story to the tabloids? Who can tell? And let us not speculate. As with all these things, the case occasionally surfaces from time to time, usually about this time of year when Halloween comes round and it is time for children in Bournemouth to carve the faces into their pumpkins again. Well, thank you for listening to that tale. I hope you didn't find the details too gruesome. Perhaps we'll return to something lighter next week. I'll see you then.